You've reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. On today's show, we're discussing
Marcus Mariota putting his career out to pasture.
The Rams 49ers tilt, a little NFC West showdown.
Jets and Cowboys, Sam Darnold is back. The Dallas Cowboys offense is back to being bad.
Will Disley is out, but is there another receiver in Seattle that can make up for his absence?
The Vikings and the Eagles face off in a battle of hopeful NFC contenders, and the Vikings show their true ceiling with Stephon Diggs' breakout game.
The Chiefs have dropped two in a row at Arrowhead, and Nuke still isn't doing things.
All that and so much more coming at you right now.
Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Liz Loza with Matt Harmon and producer Brett. And we are flying out of week six.
Week six feels like it went by quick.
It did.
It feels like today went by really quick. Like, you know, one moment we're on FFL, the next we're watching the Titans make a quarterback switch that made 0% difference.
And I'm watching you make a transition that was so smooth.
Hell yeah.
So go ahead and talk about those fantasy implications.
Nothing.
Zero.
I last week I tweeted out the clip of, you know, the red woman from Game of Thrones, like back to back, side to side.
Melisandre.
The, like, you know, red headed, beautiful version of her. Yeah. And then the one where she takes off her, her necklace or whatever. Say, like, hey, this is the Cowboys versus bad teams versus good teams. Today, I just tweeted out Titans with Marcus Mariota and with Ryan Tannehill, and it's just
the crown,
just the old lady version back to back. Yeah, clever. It's really great. Whenever you can talk about a meme on a podcast, you got it.
The second show in a row, you did it.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Yep, we talked about how you did it last week, too.
Hey, the fantasy implications, as I mentioned, probably zero for this old Titans offense. I mean, just a disaster. By the way, Mariota, like, his last pass. Perhaps as the Titans starting quarterback, it just under pressure just heaves his pass downfield. And as soon as it left his hand, and just like, and nothing good going to come out of that because that's not a Mariota throw. And sure enough, it led to the end of the Marcus Mariota era.
I think I said this on one of our halftime live streams, but I started Mark Walton, the backup running back in Miami, in favor of Corey Davis. And he, in fact, Mark Walton, outproduced Corey Davis.
3 for 36 on 5 targets. Hell yeah. Leading receiver on the day, Adam Humphries with 47 yards on 6 catches.
So I think that is something to keep an eye on if you're going to keep an eye on something, because I also don't feel like Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill are that different from one another. They're kind of carbon copies of one another.
Robotic.
But I would not be surprised if all of a sudden Adam Humphries starts getting peppered with more looks than he had in the Marcus Mariota era.
He is he'll be Ryan Tannehill's new Jarvis Landry.
I was going to say Jamison Crowder.
Hey, both things can be true. I want to come back to a point on Mariota later, but we've talked enough about him on the top. Let's keep it rolling.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Rams. I was going to say let's talk about the Rams' backfield, which definitely needs to be discussed. But as I was watching this game, and I wrote down in my notes, are the 2019 49ers basically the 2018 Rams?
What? Tell me on
that. Strong defenses.
See, that I don't think the Rams had a very good defense last year. I mean,
their
they had a lot of injuries.
Their secondary had a bunch of injuries, but their front seven was still pretty stout. Ndamukong Suh was still on the team. He didn't light it up until the postseason, but he was still there. Aaron Donald was still a beast. I thought that front seven could definitely dominate. And there was definitely a focus on the run that certainly worked, and that is working for the, quote, schematic genius, Kyle Shanahan.
And a highly efficient passer, too. I mean, it's not to the same just
explosiveness
that we've seen in L.A. the last few years, but Jimmy Garoppolo has been super efficient. 7.4 yards per attempt, 72.7% completion rate in this game. He doesn't throw any touchdowns. He fumbles the ball. He loses an interception, you know, whatever. But for the most part, like, Jimmy has run the offense efficiently and hasn't really been asked to do very much. So you could argue, like, what's the ceiling for this team because of that. But, I mean, straight up, like,
I mean, also the Rams in this matchup do have a very good secondary that is.
Yes. And to your point about the front seven, like, I think overall on the balance of the on balance this year, the Rams defense has played really well. And I think they played well in this game, too. But like, especially that defensive front in San Francisco. I mean, they are one of the most transformed units in the entire NFL. And I mean, you could say whatever you want coming into this week about strength of opponent and who they beat, but the 49ers absolutely manhandled the Bengals, manhandled the Browns. Like, I hate when people come back as, well, they haven't beat anyone. Well, yeah, but they beat the shit out of those teams. Like, it wasn't...
They held Jared Goff to 78 yards.
And now, yeah, in this game, I think this was a statement game by the 49ers. Like, go on the road in the division against a team that was in the Super Bowl last year. Yeah, there's obviously flaws, but they completely manhandled the Rams in this
one. And in fact, without Todd Gurley, you would expect the passing volume to grow in this matchup because defense, you would assume, would dare Jared Goff to throw the ball, and the fool couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it
with Akello Witherspoon in the secondary.
And frankly, like, if the pass protection continues to be a huge issue in L.A.
Noteboom is out or injured.
Yep, he left this game, didn't come back, and it's been an issue all season long. Jared Goff's not the same guy under pressure. We know that. And
12 sacks now on the season after these four.
Yep. And it was a huge problem. And that 49ers defense is just, I mean, it's really freaking good. Like, Nick Bosa, total difference maker. D Ford, nice complimentary player. And DeForest Buckner and all these other guys, like Arik Armstead, Solomon Thomas.
Juan Alexander coming back from an ACL looking okay.
That signing panned by everyone.
Yep.
And they've been
Jimmy
great all
Ward,
year.
The safety all over the field.
Yeah. Look, there's a reason I became a lifelong 49ers fan in the year 2019.
There's a reason I predicted that's the team you were going to pick.
You and everyone else. And look, they're a really good team. And they're the only undefeated team left in the NFC. I think they're legit. You could argue, we'll talk about this with the Vikings later. Like, I think the Vikings have a great ceiling in their range of outcomes every week because even though they don't want to throw the ball, they can. I do still have questions about Garoppolo and like the rest of this passing game. Like, yeah, when they're running Kyle Shanahan's system and they've got George Kittle in wide open windows, they've got Dante Pettis in wide open windows, like things go well, but do they have a counterpunch? It's totally still fair to ask that question, but for them to come into this game down their starting right tackle, down, you know, Booger McFarland's league MVP pick, Kyle Juszczyk, and they still dominate this game.
They've not been with Joe Staley.
Yeah, and they have been without Joe Staley for many weeks. From a fantasy point of view, like, this isn't a tough offense to trust because the wealth is spread around, but I think that's good for the overall health of the offense.
On the Rams side of things, let's now talk about the backfield because Todd Gurley was out with this thigh bruise that blindsided McVay, or so he said. Heading into the week, we all expected a large amount of volume out of Malcolm Brown. He actually only carried the ball 11 times, averaged 3.6 yards per carry. Darrell Henderson, the rookie, who we were all intrigued to see what kind of, and I think a couple of weeks ago, you know, Sean McVay said, we got to unleash him at some point. And I suppose this was the week. He didn't see nearly as many carries, but he was far more explosive, which does not surprise anybody, right?
Yeah.
He averaged 6.5 yards per carry and only saw two targets, caught one of those for 9 yards. But of course, Malcolm Brown not getting any work in the receiving game.
Yeah, I'm really curious as to like what the routes run were after out of here. Like, was Darrell Henderson just the clear passing down back? Because if you go back in the way back machine here, you remember that in the offseason, like, the talk was that they drafted Darrell Henderson to be their Chris Thompson, who they previously signed Lance Dunbar to be their Chris Thompson.
Chris Thompson West.
Neither one of those things was worked out to this point. Maybe.
But also, the target leader was Cooper Kupp with 6 looks. So there
They couldn't sustain drives. Like, they couldn't stay on the field because their quarterback wilts under pressure. And I mean, frankly, like
a spinach salad.
You hate to see it. And when there's this, frankly, like McVay
Sorry
hasn't
to
been.
Spinach salad told you. You're just thinking about balsamic bacon reduction over
there. If I can be quite honest, I was actually thinking about this very good chickpea pasta I made over the weekend with some wilted spinach in there, but no one wants to hear about that.
they don't.
Brett and Liz have both shaken their heads, and I'm sure everyone at home is shaking their head too. But look, Sean McVay also, I don't think he's done a great, he's still working it out in terms of like how to adjust now that teams are starting to take away the Rams' first move, you know? So I think that is crucial.
It's crucial, like a crucial catch almost.
One could say that.
So we had James Rodé on the show last Sunday, and James, who I share an NFFC team with, was quite loud about the fact that I opted for drafting Alvin Kamara over CMC. And throughout the day because the Panthers had the early 6 a.m. game, 6 a.m. on the West Coast, I was peppered with texts from James saying, here's Alvin Kamara not doing Christian McCaffrey things. So the trend continues. He did enter this game with some knee or ankle issues. There was questions to whether he started. He was always going to start, y'all. I mean, yeah. We weren't worried about that. But obviously he's underwhelmed considering some people
potentially people in this room
number one overall.
Yeah, it's been tough. I think you're gonna see a different ceiling to this offense with Drew Brees in here because, like, yeah, I think
you were right about that. Like, I poo-pooed that whole take about the ceiling being shaved off because I looked at Kamara's YPC versus stacked boxes and it was fine, it was great.
Yeah,
but I think you were right about the ceiling being shaved. So,
well, the thing too is, I mean, the whole offense, like, right, like Michael Thomas. Liz, we had a spirited conversation on our last halftime show about, like, wide receiver production. The one guy this year who's been the NFL's, like, metronome, just steady, 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 has been Michael Thomas. But really the only game that he's had that ceiling game, it's the same game that Teddy Bridgewater's had that ceiling game. Week 5 against the Buccaneers defense. And I think after looking like, wow, Todd Bowles has really turned this Buccaneers defense around, they have completely turned back into the same old goddamn Bucs, not just on the defensive side of the ball, but also their quarterback. Like, they're not a team that is anything but what we expected. Like, this, yeah, you can't really run on them. See, your boy CMC scored 2 touchdowns today, but average.
That's not my boy.
Maybe I'm talking to James here. Your boy CMC did score 2 touchdowns. Like, that's the bottom line. But he did average 1.4 yards per carry against this Bucs defense. And I think they, like, in a matchup like that, the Saints offense still had that ceiling game. But for the most part, they've been a unit like this. Like, Teddy manages the game. Kamara catches 7 passes, which is not for nothing. 35 yards, though, that's it. I think we are going to see a much bigger ceiling game from them whenever Drew Brees does get back. This game, like, just complete, almost like it didn't even happen, you know, because there was so much talk about some of these players coming into it and just, you know, no one did anything from a fantasy perspective.
It's also interesting because it's not like Kamara isn't doing the work. He's, like, doing all of the dirty work and not getting any of the credit. Week 3, 15 tackles evaded. Week 4, 10 tackles evaded. Week 5, 7 tackles evaded. Like, he's making things happen, but this offense, you're right, is just fine to win the game instead of push the pedal.
Yeah, I mean, he also has 8 catches or an eight target game, a 7 target game, a 10 target game, like, in the span without Brees. There's 1 3 target game in there against Dallas. But, like, for the most part, there haven't been explosive games on the ground. And he also hasn't found the end zone since he did in week three when he found it twice in Seattle. So, like, that was the one game where, like, he was a true difference maker. And the funny thing is, like, I think he's still 6th or 7th coming into this week in yards from scrimmage. So he's had that. He's been a floor play, which is exactly what we thought he might be.
Well, it's what you thought he would be. You can take the victory lap on it. Next week, he's at Chicago, a very rested Bears defense that has to be angry after stewing for an extra week about their loss to the Raiders. So I don't like that, though. They did allow Dalvin Cook into the end zone to fall into the end zone. So you can't deny that Kamara has the chance of getting 6. But then after that, things ease up. And this is actually around the time that Drew Brees might start to get ready. Week 8, Arizona. Week 9 is the bye. I think Brees probably comes back in week 10 versus Atlanta. That would be the target.
That would be
hello
juicy week to come back.
Week 11 at Tampa Bay. So and then Carolina and then back at Atlanta. So there is a good run happening. You just have to compensate elsewhere for Kamara's shaved ceiling, to quote you.
Yep. I think that's right.
Sam Darnold came back from mononucleosis.
Yeah.
Do you think that, in fact, he was prescribed or given some sort of anti-serum? Because he looked a little Marvel-esque.
Yeah. I saw, to talk about another internet meme, I saw my buddy Trevor Sikkema tweeted out, like, a gif of Thanos putting one of the Infinity Stones into his thing, and, like, that was how he reached
what
his full
his
power.
Thing? His hand?
In his little arm, hand, glove thing.
A gauntlet.
Sure. And that was Sam Darnold contracting mono, actually reaching the height of his full powers. Like, kind of funny, you know? This is what he needed to take that next step, was actually get mono.
He put it to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, sorry. I suck. I suck. Yeah, the Jets take it to the Cowboys. Almost blew that thing at the end, though. Almost did. But credit to Greg Williams. Just sent a full on-out, all-out blitz at the Dallas Cowboys on the 2-point
full
conversion.
Full house blitz.
Yeah. Pretty, pretty, pretty ballsy stuff there by one Greg Williams. When it goes well, it works, you know.
So this morning during FFL, both Andy Behrens and I, upon giving our final thoughts for the episode, wanted to take a special look at how Sam Darnold's re-entrance into the Jets offense would affect the other pieces, particularly Le'Veon Bell's. Le'Veon Bell does seem to be back to a certain degree. I mean, he wasn't particularly efficient on the ground, but he did score. And I think if you're a Le'Veon Bell owner over the past few weeks, you will take it.
Well, you're looking, it's like we talked about with Alvin Kamara. Even if the individual performance, like whatever, give or take, it's all about like, are you going to get touchdown chances? That was a short touchdown that he converted into that touchdown, Le'Veon Bell. So like the ceiling is back for the Jets offense. And I wrote in my week six preview column, like wondering just how much better does Sam Darnold make does he make the Jets? Like, obviously they're like the dead worst offense ever with Luke frickin' Falk back there. But do they become like the 15th, 12th type best? Is Sam Darnold that good to take them all the way up from the cellar to there? This was a really good test case for that. And like, people that had been dead in the water for weeks started to come alive. Robbie Anderson, 92-yard touchdown. Jamison Crowder averaged 16.3 yards per catch. That's like double what we saw in week one.
Your boy, Demaryius Thomas, third in team targets.
33-yard catch. A 33-yard catch.
He's
what
back.
Year is this? Also, Ryan Griffin in the Chris Herndon role finds the end zone.
He does.
You know, so that's good news for you Chris Herndon truthers who maybe in 2023.
Week 8, baby Jacksonville.
He'll finally be back. Yeah, I mean, this was a great showing for the Jets offense. Like last week when I'm asking you, like, is Adam Gase one and done? Like, is this a possibility here? More performances like these will show you, okay, Sam Darnold really is the tide that lifts all boats here. They're not just
good
this
for
offense,
you, Sammy,
but for this entire team.
Also, what does this say about Dallas? Like, I am worried about Dallas because last week they got beat on the ground. This week they get beat through the air. They cannot stay consistent. I mean, you mentioned your meme. You described it in fantastic detail at the top of the show. We don't need to do it again.
I just rewind it if you're with the listener and go back to the top of the episode, start the whole thing over again and listen to it.
So are you worried about this defense from a matchup standpoint, or are they just sort of a beatable middle of the pack, regardless of whichever weapon you are trying to exploit against?
I think they're one of the many defenses in the NFL that doesn't move the needle either way. Like, they're not one of these defenses like the Bucks, where it's like everyone in the pool, you know, like start all your players
Atlanta
that are going against. They're the Falcons, where it's like you got a player playing the Falcons, throw them in there. And then they're also not a unit like, I don't know, who are even the good defenses? Like
San Francisco.
I mean, you would say like the Chicago Bears of 2018, where it's like, oh, anyone playing the Bears, you're in trouble. Like,
Denver has stiffened a little bit.
Stiffened, but this is what I'm saying. There's so many of these defenses where it's like
New Orleans.
They just don't move the needle one way or the other. Like, some week you could have an explosive week against them. Others, like, they'll be fine. Like, Dallas has really good players at all levels of the defense, but just not to the point where I'm real nervous starting anyone against them, or on the other end, like, I'm getting everybody. You know, today it kind of was. Everyone did a little bit of something here for the Jets, but I don't know that that's normally going to be the case. I'm a little more concerned. Like, Dallas's offense is troubling too. Amari Cooper leaves this game, never comes back. He had been, in a weird way, had been saying like, well, I've played through injuries before, I'll be fine. Well, eventually the Grim Reaper comes for all of us all, my friend. And like, he leaves this game. I don't remember what the injury was, a quad injury or something.
Quad injury, and he had pretty significant pain.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you keep playing through injury, this is going to happen. And Dak has pretty severe splits with and without Amari Cooper.
Yep.
It's also worth noting that
Amari versus home and Amari away is also two different Amaris.
True. And Dallas also was missing its top two tackles in this game. So
saw that last week, because also, Dak, if you want to get paid the money, you got to play clean.
Right. And you could argue that, I mean, Dak Prescott had some moments today where he looked like that elevating type quarterback, but the problem is, like, maybe, and to the same point about that I just made with defenses, I think Dak falls somewhere within that, like, top 12, 15-ish quarterbacks in the NFL, where it's like, everything is going great. Cool, you're Jared Goff. Like, give him the damn contract, because he can he can win when everything is going right. You know, early in the year, Dallas is fully healthy. They've got Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper. They've got an offensive line. They're facing soft opponents. Like, Devin Smith is popping. Randall Cobb looks aight. Jason Witten is finding the end zone. Like, all things were working for Dallas. You've got your quarter. You've got your offensive coordinator calling good plays. I think Dak can not just be good, but be great when all things are right. But you have to certainly acknowledge it. Of late, things have not been all right for
Would
Dallas.
You argue that perhaps one of the issues in Dallas is that before Kellen Moore took over, we knew what the identity was, right? The offense flowed through Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm not saying it doesn't anymore because he was certainly the most productive of the
carries.
Cowboys players, right? But Kellen Moore, a couple of weeks ago, we were saying was exciting because he's opening this offense. He's giving this team options. But now, I'm not sure. Sometimes they say too many choices is a bad thing, right? I am wondering now, and Brett, you can confirm this, that it was either Therese or Charles said on last week's episode of the Yahoo NFL podcast that Kellen Moore as a former quarterback is great at adjusting when he's calling the plays, but he has trouble setting a tone and finding out what the like initial objective of the game should be.
Yeah, I don't remember which one. I would recommend subscribing and listening to the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. But yeah, the point was that he's not great at the scripting, right? We're used to teams coming out with their first 15 or so plays being scripted, something that the players work on at the latter half of the week. And that hasn't really
worked
well.
So he can adjust because as a former quarterback, he knows how to do that, but he doesn't really know how to set the story into motion.
Exactly. So
set the narrative.
Exactly. We've seen the Cowboys come out and not look great to start off games, but you know, coming out of the second half, they almost come back and win against the Jets today. We were seeing a lot of them almost same thing against the Packers a week or two ago. They're playing catch up a lot.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
And that is because of the play calling. And I just think that's fascinating also from a fantasy point of view because it does make all of these pieces viable.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott remains, you know, the best running back in football from a fantasy perspective. Michael Gallup is a damn stud. I mean, he might have only had 48 yards today, but he got 7 targets. If Amari Cooper is out.
Dropped one, yeah.
But Michael Gallup's going to continue to get volume. He's a great player. He separates fantastically. I am interested to hear your take, however, on if Amari is out, who is the second option? Or is there not one because it's sprinkled throughout Dalton Schultz and Cedric Wilson and Jason Witten and all the Tavon Austin's getting some 6 targets.
Tavon Austin led the pass catching group in yards today. That's not what you want to see. When Michael Gallup left the lineup, Devin Smith played like all the snaps. But he's hurt now. So now, I really do think it's probably just going to be a little too spread out. And again, if we're talking about this offense scaling back the ceiling, when they were firing on all cylinders and, you know, they're dunking on the Dolphins and dunking on Washington, dunking on New York, then it's like, cool, yeah, I'm down to take a flyer on Devin Smith or Randall Cobb or one of these guys. But when they're not performing up to those expectations, then I think I'm messing with the core players, which is, you know, Zeke, Gallup, Dak, and that's probably it.
Because Amari's hurt, and also Cobb was out this week, too. You know who else got hurt, and this one hurts. This hurt hurts me personally. Will Disley left with what turned out to be an Achilles tear. It was a non-contact leg injury, ruled an Achilles, so he's probably out for the year. The tight end landscape continues to be just a mess. And Will Disley was becoming such an exciting player, such a great story, so fun to watch. The Seahawks were scheming for him. It really looked like he was not the engine, but maybe like one of the Pistons that ran this offense.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, the Seahawks offense had looked like it really found a great trio for Russell Wilson. And Chris Carson, by the way, did work again today, his third straight 100-yard game. He's clearly been really good for this team. So they've been great in the running game. But in the passing game, Tyler Lockett has been thriving as a number one receiver. He almost scored a touchdown today, had 75 yards. Your boy Will Disley has been great. And DK Metcalf, by the way, like, it's not too early to say.
So efficient. I did not see that coming.
It is not too early to say that they hit like a home run, like they got a total steal at the end of the second round. Because just right now, at worst, he looks like a quality starter and they're using him the right ways. You know, they're only having him run a handful of routes, only really lining him up in one spot, having him just do the same thing over and over again. So that speaks to that efficiency. Brian Schottenheimer, hats off, like, baby, you figured out that just ask my guy to do the one thing he does well and he'll do it. Like, It's a bummer, though, that Will Dissly is removed from this equation, especially after they just traded Nick Vanette not but a few weeks ago.
I mean, why tight end's got to be great? Wait, what is it? Hold on. Why a tight end got to be great till a tight end need to be great?
Shout out to Lizzo. The game never used to have a bad tight end.
Lizzo and I aren't quite the same.
Oh, okay.
Why a tight end got to be great till a tight end's got to be great?
No, why a tight end great until a tight end gotta be great?
Oh, yeah, why a man great till they gotta be great? Why a tight end great till they gotta be great?
This is a Lizzo song?
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. It's the one that everyone knows.
Old.
What do you mean?
I'm too old.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway.
Moving on. Brett's, watch your Tiny Desk appearance. Great.
Pipes. She's very talented. I like her music, but I don't listen to any of it. I'm familiar with like the two or three songs.
I like her music, but I don't listen to any of it.
Yeah.
I'm an old man.
I'm like,
an old man. You appreciate Lizzo for the queen that she is.
Of course I do.
But would prefer to listen to
Stephen Malkmus and like old.
I mean, that
old
sounds
man.
Like a character on Boy Meets World. I don't even know. Talk about being old.
Shout out to Boy Meets World here in the year 2019. God. Shout out to Liz for calling the Will Dissly breakout. Sad to see it end.
And like the Lizzo ref.
Shout out to Lizzo for the Instagram name Lizzo Be Eating, one of the best of all time.
You know who else is going to eat potentially without Will Dissly in the lineup, or at least he did in week 6? Jerron Brown, baby.
Two touchdowns.
And Matt, you know this, heading into week 6, he spent 38% of his time in the slot.
Almost like we did a video on that earlier.
What? Jerron Brown is owned in 0% of Yahoo leagues. Could he see, I'm going to say yes, could he see a larger role now that Dissly is no longer active?
We'll see. What we were talking about earlier with the Cowboys, when, oh boy, like some injuries start happening, things are going off script, we're not necessarily interested in coming down the range to some guys like, you know, Cedric Wilson or whatever. But here in Seattle, the offense is running at peak efficiency. Russell Wilson is the MVP candidate through 6 weeks. Then we are interested in the number 3 receiver.
Also, Jerron Brown, I mean, like I would have imagined it was David Moore, but then finding out that Jerron Brown is seeing those targets in the middle of the field, which is obviously where Dissly worked some, I am interested in him, and there is an off-again, on-again relationship between the Seahawks and Jerron Brown, so maybe he's the one that got away, and now they want him back.
Sure.
Definitely happens. Why are you shaking your head, Brett?
I don't know. I was trying to think of someone who got away.
From you?
Yeah.
Brett's in a real vulnerable spot.
I was trying to like play along with the bit there.
Okay.
All right.
Well, the Vikings are playing along with a bit quite well. At least Kirk Cousins is. And the bit that he is trying to play along with is quarterback who efficiently puts the ball in the air.
How nice.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Man. See, this is the thing I was talking about earlier. Like
this
Vikings,
is your ceiling argument, which I think is quite good.
Like we have
You're
seen,
welcome.
We have seen. Thank you. We have seen teams like the Texans and the Bengals just find their way into the playoffs, like through the mid 2010s or whatever you're supposed to call them, like the mid from
decades.
I have no idea. But anyways, like the decadats.
Decadats.
From the year like, you know, 2010 to, I don't know, like just the like last few seasons before like the Texans got Deshaun Watson and they might have a better ceiling. Like you saw those teams fart their way into the playoffs like every year everyone knew that they weren't going anywhere because they don't have any ceiling. The Vikings, however, like they have the floor to be that team because they have one of the best running games, one of the best defenses in the NFL. But what they've shown us over the last 2 weeks that when they want to, like when the matchup is advantageous, when you're playing a team with issues in the secondary, like both the Giants and the Eagles have, you have two unbelievably talented receivers that you can flow the offense through and a quarterback who has all sorts of problems, but has shown that he can be productive in the right spot. So that's the type of ceiling that takes a team from being it's like the 2017 Eagles who beat these Vikings in the playoffs. Like they had a great defense, they had a great roster set up, but when Nick Foles went nuclear,
they
it
also
took them
had
to
a play
ceiling.
Caller that was willing to be flexible. And I am not sold that Mike Zimmer is willing to be flexible if the matchup isn't requiring him to do something other than he wants.
And that's a huge problem when we're talking about, like, I think the roster is set up for them to have that ceiling. It just is this weird stubborn. I think it's actually a pretty good sign that of the last 2 weeks, they've realized, like, okay, we've got two chirping receivers.
But Matt, at the Giants versus Philadelphia, he's completed 22 passes in back-to-back weeks. He's gone over 300 yards in back-to-back weeks. I don't think you do that at Detroit. Like, I don't think you're, I don't think that Mike Zimmer, I think you look at those two secondaries and even we are sitting here saying, like, please air it out. Also, well, the trade deadline's coming. Like, please air it out. And so he does it. But I don't think that it is within the ethos of this team to not hammer the run if you are explicitly told you'll be a dummy if you do it.
Yeah, then Mike Zimmer's a bad coach.
This remains to be seen.
If that's the case, if you're so stubborn that you have to go down swinging the only way you know how, and you can't see, like, oh wow, when we unleash Stephon Diggs, he scores three freaking touchdowns. And yeah, it's against a bad secondary, but it's the same argument about the 49ers earlier. Like, there's a difference between, like, oh yeah, Stephon Diggs, he's facing the Eagles and he got 85 yards and a touchdown. Like, great, glad we started him in fantasy. Between the, he goes and thumps him for three.
He had a decent week four against Chicago.
Yep.
And then was not used in week five at the Giants.
I think it's going to be a rocky road for these receivers. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh great, now it's top 12. I'm just saying more from, like, a real life perspective. I think that in the playoffs, if they're, you know, down 7 points against, I don't know, the damn Eagles again, like, you have this this capability in your range of outcomes to be a team that can be really good through the air when you want to be. Like, no, I don't think the equation has changed all that much from a fantasy perspective, that you know what Diggs' floor is, which is scary low, and you know what his ceiling is, which is...
His floor shouldn't be so scary low, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to make.
I completely agree with you, but unfortunately, I think they have a little bit of, like, an over... Like, this whole run thing is an overcorrection from when Mike Zimmer got pissy about...
Seattle game of last year,
yep,
where Flip got fired for not wanting to put the ball on the ground. Sure. We should also mention that it wasn't just Stephon Diggs. Here's actually the point. So Adam Thielen went off last week. This week, Diggs goes off, though Thielen did see 8 targets and he did score. He just only had 57 yards. Is this an offense? And I think you're saying yes. And I will say yes, that only has so much passing production to support one of these receivers. And you're not going to ever have to guess which it is.
Yep. I do agree with that.
Okay. Let's talk about the backfield, only because there were people during our live streams who seemed a little shook about the fact that Alexander Mattison had 14 carries to Dalvin Cook's 16, and that this felt a little bit split. To me, this was something wise that Zimmer did, because it's kind of a tell, because if you want Dalvin Cook to be the engine of the offense in a week where you don't need him to be, why not keep his legs fresh, especially when you look at his injury history?
And the matchup, too. Like, it's...
Sure.
Mattison ended up running fine. And I think he's good, too, by the way.
I like him.
Mattison looks good out there. He was a third-round pick for a reason. They talked about him as their quote-unquote Latavius Murray. That role hasn't developed, except this week we saw some of it. But, like, for the most part, I think he's a good player. So it's nice to have that second counterpunch, considering you want this to be your team's strength. Yeah, I think that was a smart move by them to not just drill him into the ground, you know, when they're controlling the action.
My boy Jordan Howard. My boy.
Your boy Jordan Howard.
For you.
Yeah.
49 yards on 13 carries.
I did Fearless Forecast for him this week. And I mean, I'm assuming he had no catches.
Correct.
Yeah, I think I've over forecasted him for 58 yards and that's it. But the point being in that was, like, this was just a really tough matchup. You don't want to be playing Jordan Howard in a condition like this, despite all the touchdowns.
Something to keep an eye on, though. Miles Sanders was the third running back touchdown that came via the air when facing the Minnesota Vikings. So I don't know if that's going to bear out, but he did catch 3 of 3 for 86 and a touch. So I am just going to see if a trend develops there.
By the way, Miles Sanders has 4 catches of 30 or more yards in 6 games. That's like 4 catches of 30 plus yards. He's like been the only big play threat for the Eagles. Like, this team
without Deshaun Jackson
desperately needs Deshaun Jackson back.
We'll see. There's a tear in his abdomen. That doesn't sound particularly good. I've never torn my abdomen, but I'm guessing it takes a while to heal.
Nope. I would imagine it's not fun.
All right. Texans, Chiefs. Another nug. Matt, you were full of nugs this week.
Yeah. The Texans have not allowed a sack in the last two games. That is considered to be their biggest problem area. It's not shown up the last couple of games. Let's be clear. They played the Falcons. The Falcons, Liz, you can rush the passer as well as anyone on the Falcons.
I'm huge. Very imposing figure.
See, I see you as more of a Dwight Freeney type. Like, you can get her, you can do that spinning. Oh, you get around the edge real well. And then, of course, they play the Chiefs. They were without Chris Jones in this one. Frank Clark has obviously not been what they'd expected so far. So, not exactly a ferocious pass rush teams that they played the last couple of weeks, but it's an improvement.
And we should also mention, though, that Titus Howard, their rookie tackle, did leave this week's game with an injury, so keep an eye on that, because that could obviously be a step backwards if he were to miss time.
Yes, but the Texans, like, I thought this was a big stage for them.
Huge.
Going into Arrowhead, which is, I believe, as you've told me.
I don't know. It's a tough place to play.
Wouldn't know based on the last 2 weeks, as they've dropped it to two AFC South teams.
Boom! Bring the heat, Harmon.
Deshaun Watson to go in, out-duel an injured Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes throws his first interception. This is the type of game where you wonder about the Texans and their potential ceiling.
42 passing attempts for Deshaun Watson, 35 for Patrick Mahomes. So this was a battle. Patrick Mahomes, 3 touchdowns, 273 yards. I mean,
yeah,
that's not Mahomesian.
It isn't. But this goes back to the point we were making on Thursday's podcast, which is like,
Mahomes, is he the fifth best?
Mahomes looks like the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the league. And Watson answered the call to be more than that, to be like, oh, can I be the third best quarterback in the league? And I mean, honestly, Watson, he has this moments where he, you know, kind of sticks his head in the sand and really makes some mistakes. But when he plays unchained like this, the results are really good from both a real life and a fantasy perspective. I mean, he scores 31 fantasy points in this game, obviously because he did a lot of work on the ground too, carried 2 touchdowns in. But like, this is what makes it, guys, you watch a quarterback like this and then you watch quarterbacks like Matt Ryan who have like no mobility, and it's just like, man, this really brings you such a different dimension to your team.
And it brings a breathlessness, I think, to watching it, exciting piece of it. DeAndre Hopkins, again, the target leader with 12, caught 9 of those for just 55 yards. This is kind of what started the argument, right? No, it was OBJ.
Then I brought up the point about Hopkins.
So he's still a clear-cut wide receiver 1, regardless of matchup for you. You're not jilted at all or tilted.
No, I mean, my point to you earlier was that, like, this is just how it happens with wide receivers, right? Like, there's a lot of volatility in their production. Like, point to the guy this year who hasn't been that way. I mean, Michael Thomas, I guess, is the one guy could say. Even Keenan Allen had, like, 18 yards last week against the Broncos.
Okay, but that's one game. There have been plenty of get-right spots for DeAndre Hopkins and OBJ, and they haven't gotten it right.
The fact that it's different, I think, in Houston, because Houston, you have a quarterback playing well. Like,
you didn't have as many off-season flowery articles, and so expectations weren't the same either.
No. The reason that with Hopkins, I think there's no doubt it's tilting, right? Like, because he has done nothing really since week 1. I mean, 9 catches is not nothing, but for the most part, like, yeah, you haven't seen, he hasn't found the end zone since week 1. But the volume was here in this game when they needed to open it up. Just a couple, like,
I think his usage isn't sexy. That his usage isn't highlight reel in the like big. I mean, Will Fuller is the one who's getting all of the like gorgeous downfield opportunities. Dropped freaking half of them.
Well,
in this one,
he caught 3 touchdowns last week. He dropped 3 potential touchdowns this week. Life has a way of evening itself out.
Indeed. And Kenny Stills, who wasn't active for this game, is also the other like field stretcher. And I think DeAndre Hopkins, I made this point on the live stream, is being used in clutch moments, in real life important moments. But those aren't always. They're chain moving moments. They're win the game moments. They aren't fancy fantasy production moments.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was my argument against him as the number one receiver this year, was that there's a lot of more options. There's a lot more options in the offense this year. And I think that's also true in Cleveland, too, with Odell Beckham. The thing is just like the Browns look to be in a bit more chaos. Like, Freddie Kitchens still has not figured this thing out. Baker Mayfield, like, this was going to be my point about Marcus Mariota earlier is that evaluating young quarterbacks is still the hardest thing to do in the league, because like you can honk all you want about Baker Mayfield sucking this year, but like guy set the rookie touchdown record last year. You know, it's tough. Like Jared Goff in year one looks like a total dust ball, and then the last couple of years he looks great, and then now he looks like kind of a dust ball again. I think so much about these quarterbacks is just the conditions that they are in. And I think you can go from, like, no one goes from Deshaun Kaiser bad to then being like a great starting quarterback, but you can go from like, you can swing anywhere from where Baker Mayfield is right now to where Baker Mayfield was last year. And I still don't think we know who the hell he really is. And Marcus Mariota is that guy that like at different points of his career, people wanted to crown him because of his great touchdown rate, not
but he's
throwing
always
turnovers.
Had bad mechanics, and he's never fixed them.
Yeah, so and that's like that's the thing too. Carson Wentz, another player, great example. Like,
well,
different
his players,
points,
the guys in the locker room don't like him.
But this is, I mean, it's just from an on-field perspective. Like he, at one point in his rookie year, like towards the end of it, is like, man, he has like Blake Bortles mechanics. He's really starting to break down, and then he's like an MVP candidate in September. So I don't quite know what my point is there, but like these guys, like Baker Mayfield, is another player that. Like, I would not shock me one bit if come week 10, like, these two guys just figure it out because we both we know they're good and we're just firing away. Same with Watson and Hopkins. Like, it won't surprise me if in a couple of weeks, like, I mean, this is my point about, like, sometimes the answer in fantasy, like, what's going on with Hopkins? What's going on with Beckham? Sometimes it's just shit happens, right? Like,
yes, that is sometimes the answer. But I think from a fantasy perspective, you are trying to figure out the why so that you can strategize for your own fantasy squad. So, like, you can't say there is an absolute possibility. We all know what OBJ's ceiling is. We all know what Hopkins' ceiling is. And so we're chasing that ceiling, right? So if it's not working, there is also a like, hey, what is the formula? And it's an unknowable thing, but this is why we play it. Like, what is the formula to make sure I don't F myself or, yeah, you know, like in until that thing clicks, because we wouldn't assume it would click if there wasn't potential for it to click.
Yeah. And I think that's just adjusting expectations, right? Like it's just,
yes.
Yeah.
It is adjusting expectations.
Hope is poison.
Hope. Well, that we definitely agree on. Tyreek Hill is still a stud. He scored 2 touchdowns. Don't worry about any, I will ask you one more question. Don't worry about any rust was the end of that thought. The backfield in Kansas City, I had a lot of questions about it heading into this week. There's still questions of coming out of this week. LeSean McCoy, I'm going to say something. LeSean McCoy is now like an early down grinder.
Yeah,
at 30.
Yeah. And but yeah, I mean, he looks like he should be an early down grinder too. I don't think he's looked like that great this year.
Nope, but it's Damien Williams who's getting like the pass catching options. Last week, it looked like, granted, McCoy had fumbled, and so who knows if that's some weird punishment thing, that it looked like Damien Williams back from injury was supposed to be the RB1, the featured back in this backfield. Are there any answers here for you other than the fact that McCoy is going to be the early down back and Damien Williams is going to be like the explosive third down option?
Yeah, Williams was in on 18 plays in this one and 17 of them were passing plays. So like that is some clarity to his role. And it also could be the it's not really a game script situation, right? Because coming out the first quarter, Kansas City had a 17-3 lead. Now then they give up 20 freaking points in the second quarter, 20 unanswered points in the second quarter. So I don't know that there's really like a game script answer or anything like that. I think right now they just don't, they've not settled on who their running back is. I think they're still trying to kind of, I think they're still kind of trying to figure it out. Like Daryl Williams, Daryl with one L, mm-hmm, Williams, he catches one long one for 52 yards. I think they're, as much as us, still searching for answers in the backfield.
OJ Howard owners have been looking for answers since jump. I jumped off the bandwagon in that week against the Giants, but heading into this week, hope became poison again because Leftwich said it was coming. Arians talked him up. I mean, from a personal perspective, dudes, I love you. Some might argue too much, but if I believed every promise a guy made me, I'd be living in a trailer park in Des Plaines, Illinois. Shout out, by the way, to my Aunt Barb, who's hanging out at the Oasis past 53.
Shout out to Barb.
For sure. It didn't happen. Now there are trade rumors. Yeah. He's droppable, right? Like, I'm not waiting till Halloween to see if he lands someplace, right? Like,
I mean, the problem is, like,
And who else are you going to? I understand he's like wildly athletic, so maybe he pops and the whole landscape is nuts. But would you drop him just so you could stream instead of being beholden to this roster spot?
No question. I mean, he is, trust me, as someone that's got the O.J. Howard ankle or weight tied around his ankle on plenty of rosters, I think he's just sitting there looking at it like, okay, am I going with O.J. Howard or am I chancing a streamer? That sort of thing. And oftentimes I look at the tight ends out there and I'm like, I'll just go ahead and play O.J. Howard over Jason Witten. And usually that ends up being a mistake.
So release it. Release the hope.
Yeah.
It is poison. I will say your hopefulness about Curtis Samuel, though, did work out at least in week six.
Yeah, I mean, this Bucs defense has turned back into the pumpkin, as I mentioned earlier. Two sacks over the last 2 weeks. Kyle Allen and Teddy Bridgewater, while they've played winning football, have started to, we know who they are, right? Kyle Allen is a good backup quarterback, but not a guy that's about to take Cam Newton's job. Give me a break with that. And Teddy Bridgewater is an efficient game manager. And against Tampa Bay, they're unloading passes left and right, and both manage passer rating north of 100. So great matchup for Curtis Samuel in this one. But I mean, yeah, this is a player as talented as him in an offense that has a lot of weapons and can move the football when it's rolling. This is always in the range of outcomes.
I'm going to give you the next 3 weeks for a player running back that is now in a run first offense that went for over 100 yards. You ready? And you're going to tell me how excited you are to play him week to week.
I'm all right. No.
Versus San Francisco. Nope. At Minnesota.
Nope.
At Buffalo. Bye. Another month. But this guy did go for over 100 yards, and man, his current head coach says he really wants to feed this running back. Are you buying or selling? This is kind of like your unboxing series.
Yeah, except I looked at the outline for once and I know who you're going to ask about.
Are you buying Adrian Peterson?
No!
Yeah, we don't need to talk about it, guys. I just gave you a schedule. If you started him today, congratulations. Take the victory lap and make some room on your roster. That is going to be us. We are going to make some room for more hashtag content coming up. We'll be back on Friday, y'all. Follow us on Twitter @YahooFantasy. I'm @LizLoza. That's @MattHarmon_BYB. And we are